of the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. Officials with the United States and Britain say at least three sailors were killed in a Houthi missile attack on a Red Sea merchant ship on Wednesday. Reuters correspondent Rachel Faber has more.
Yemen's Houthis claimed responsibility for the attack, with a military spokesperson confirming it in a televised address. The attack set the Greek-owned, Barbados-flagged ship, True Confidence, ablaze. These are the first fatalities reported since the Houthis began strikes against shipping in one of the world's busiest sea lanes in mid-November. They have said they are acting in solidarity with Palestinians to oppose Israel's military actions in Gaza. Britain and the United States have been launching retaliatory strikes against the Houthis, and the confirmation of fatalities could lead to pressure for stronger military action.
That was Reuters correspondent Rachel Faber. The United States Central Command issued a statement Thursday saying it conducted self-defense strikes against two unmanned aerial vehicles in a Houthi-controlled area of Yemen that presented an imminent threat to merchant vessels and U.S. Navy ships in the region. Talks on a ceasefire in Gaza and hostage exchange between Israel and Hamas remained at an impasse Wednesday as the humanitarian crisis in the enclave deepened. Negotiators from Hamas, Qatar, and Egypt were in Cairo trying to secure a 40-day ceasefire in the war between Israel and the Islamist group in time for the Muslim fasting month of Ramadan, which begins early next week. Israel did not send negotiators to the Cairo talks. Israeli forces, which began their offensive in Gaza after the deadly Hamas raid on Israel on October 7th, have continued bombarding the Palestinian enclave since the talks began in Cairo on Sunday. Join VOA's Flashpoint Global Crises as we delve into the heart of the world's most pressing global conflicts and crises, from the Israel-Hamas war to the Russia-Ukraine war. This is VOA News. The International Court of Justice says South Africa has asked the court to offer additional emergency measures against Israel, which it says is breaching the measures already in place. In its application to the UN-backed court, South Africa warned Palestinians in Gaza were facing starvation and asked the court to order all parties cease hostilities and release all hostages and detainees. In a statement issued Wednesday, the South African presidency warned the people of Gaza cannot wait. The United States said on Wednesday it was calling on Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry to expedite a political transition as armed gangs seek his ouster amid a collapse in security and a humanitarian crisis in the Caribbean nation. Henry, Haiti's unelected interim leader, has been in the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico since Tuesday, apparently unwilling or unable to return to his strife-torn country after traveling to Kenya to rally security backing. Here's State Department spokesman Matthew Miller.
We are not calling on him or pushing for him to resign, but we are urging him to expedite the transition to an empowered and inclusive governance structure that will move with urgency to help the country prepare for a multinational security support mission to address the security situation and pave the way for free and fair elections.
Miller also said the U.S. is not helping the prime minister return home. Lawmakers in the Republican-led U.S. House of Representatives have passed a series of spending bills worth $460 billion that will fund key federal agencies throughout the remainder of the budget year. Here's AP correspondent Ed Donahue.
The House has passed a package of spending bills that would avert a partial government shutdown by the end of the week. A significant number of Republicans lined up against these bills. Speaker Mike Johnson says he is being realistic.
We're not going to get everything that we want. We want to cut spending. We want to limit the size and scope of the federal government. The reality right now is we have divided government. We have a two-vote majority, one of the smallest in history.
Massachusetts Democrat Jim McGovern says Republicans aren't serious. To get anything done, there must be bipartisanship.
It has been our votes that have kept the lights on since September. We believe in governing. We believe that shutting the government down is a bad, terrible, awful idea.
Lawmakers are negotiating a second package of bills, including defense, that would have all federal agencies fully funded before a March 22nd deadline. Ed Donahue, Washington.
International Edition delivers insight into world news through eyewitnesses, correspondent reports, and analysis from experts and newsmakers. We also keep you in touch with social media, science, and entertainment trends. That's VOA's International Edition. I'm Richard Green for VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 7th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. The M23 rebel group takes over the town of Nyanzale in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, killing at least 15 people in bomb attacks.
What we're looking at right now in Sudan alone is 18 million people who are in acute hunger. That's 37% of the population. But to explain, that is now currently in the middle of the harvest season, which is typically the most food secure time of the year.
The World Food Program warns that Sudan's ongoing conflict is fueling unprecedented hunger crisis, not only within Sudan, but also in neighboring South Sudan and Chad.
He says the state must review the status of the market. He says if not, it is very difficult to make ends meet. He says Guinea is importing more food than it is producing. He says they have to find a lasting solution to the problem.
And in Guinea-Conakry, the authorities and labor unions hold talks to reduce the price of basic food items ahead of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Those stories are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The M23 rebel group took over the town of Nyanzale in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo on Wednesday, killing at least 15 people in bomb attacks. A local official told Reuters the victims were killed by bombs fired indiscriminately by the M23. Nyanzale is about 130 kilometers or 80 miles north by road from the provincial capital Goma and is home to thousands of internally displaced people who fled fighting in surrounding areas. The M23 is a Tutsi-led group that has intensified its campaign in eastern Congo this year. UN experts and Western powers such as the United States and France say the group is backed by Rwanda, which Rwanda denies. The EU this week called for dialogue between Congo and Rwanda to tackle the root causes of the conflict, saying only a political solution could end it. For more on the situation there, I reached reporter Zanem Netzaidi in Goma.
Yes, Douglas. Today, the M23 rebels took the locality of Nyanzale, 27 kilometers north of the city of Goma. The locality was taken by the M23 rebels after 2 days of clashes with the Congolese army, clashes which caused a massive displacement of the population towards the north in the Lubero territory.
Nyanzale town has had a lot of internally displaced people. Do we know their fate or whether they are safe?
Yes, Nyanzale was home to tens of thousands of people displaced by earlier clashes. But these people have been forced to flee once again to the north of Nyanzale in Lubero territory, and where they are, according to the latest news, they are safe. But the question is, how long will they stay safe? Because the rebels have a tendency to advance towards where they have taken refuge.
Nyanzale is not very far from Goma. Do you think Goma could be the next city to be the target of the M23 rebels?
It's true that Nyanzale is a very important locality with a population of over 80,000. But before it, other very important towns not far from the town of Goma had already been taken. So the case of Nyanzale is yet another in a long line of towns falling into rebel hands. It has to be said that Goma is a great risk because for the time being, clashes are continuing some 20 kilometers from the city, and the city is surrounded. Today, to leave Goma, you have to cross Lake Kivu, as all the roads are cut off.
As reporter Zanem Netzaidi, he spoke with me from Goma, Eastern DRC. The World Food Program warns that Sudan's ongoing conflict is fueling an unprecedented hunger crisis not only within Sudan, but also in neighboring South Sudan and Chad. Nabel Biagio discusses the situation with Lenny Kinsley, head of communications for World Food Program in Nairobi.
The war in Sudan risks creating the world's largest hunger crisis, affecting Sudan, but also South Sudan and Chad, where a lot of Sudanese refugees and also other refugee returnees are going back to, unless the fighting stops, to stem the flow of people fleeing into neighboring countries. And WFP is able to deliver urgently needed food assistance. And for this to be prevented, there needs to be an immediate ceasefire to prevent a complete collapse of the country and further regional destabilization. What we're looking at right now in Sudan alone is 18 million people who are in acute hunger. That's 37% of the population. But to explain, that is now currently in the middle of the harvest season, which is typically the most food secure time of the year. In the coming months, we expect to see a rise actually in the levels of hunger and worsening of the situation, because the lean season is coming, and that means that food stocks are going to run out. And we're already looking at a below average harvest year agricultural production this year, also because of the impact of the conflict. So we anticipate that these needs will just skyrocket, and we could be looking at a looming hunger catastrophe that is unprecedented. And especially if the fighting doesn't stop, this will just continue to spiral into higher levels of hunger and deeper levels of hunger.
And beside the fighting itself that is ongoing and devastating, access seems to be a major issue here. You mentioned, WFP mentions that 90% of people facing hunger in Sudan are in inaccessible areas. Tell me a little bit about that. And we know that aid has been prevented from entering Sudan, although we seem to be seeing good news that the government in Port Sudan, the army, is willing to allow aid to flow in from Chad and South Sudan. Can you tell me a little bit about these developments?
So at the moment, the people who are in the highest level of hunger, which at the moment in Sudan is emergency levels, that is the second worst category before catastrophic. Of those, we are only able to reach and access 1 in 10 people. So exactly 90% of the people who are currently in the highest levels of hunger in Sudan, we are not able to reach. This is mostly areas where conflict is ongoing, like Khartoum, the Kordofan region in South Central Sudan, as well as in the Darfur, where it's been extremely challenging to access. So we welcome the announcement from the authorities that they will allow cross-border operations, cross-border aid deliveries from Chad into Western Sudan to resume, as well as the cross-border operations from South Sudan into Sudan. This is a welcome step that needs to be put into action immediately as we start to move the trucks and move food. We would hope that we see those words put into action and those guarantees fulfilled.
Speaking of South Sudan and Chad, South Sudan, for example, you estimate, and other UN organizations estimate that 600,000 Sudanese have fled Sudan and they're now in South Sudan, and they're also facing severe hunger. Chad also has been taking hundreds of thousands of refugees from Darfur. And it's really at this point a regional hunger and displacement crisis. Can you say a few words about that?
Yeah, so we have seen now nearly 2 million people who have fled from Sudan into neighboring countries, mostly Chad and South Sudan, where resources are already very scarce, where there are already high levels of food insecurity and instability. And so people who are fleeing the violence in Sudan arrive at the border and are met with more hunger and continue to struggle how to survive.
And in these areas, WSP urgently requires additional funding to be able to scale up its support to the refugees and in some cases returnees who are crossing borders.
That was Lenny Kinsley, World Food Program's head of communication, speaking with my colleague Nabil Biagio from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. The Senegalese government has announced March 24th as the new date for the country's delayed presidential election. A statement issued after a meeting of the Council of Ministers on Wednesday noted that the government has also been dissolved with the new prime minister announced. President Macky Sall said in early February he was postponing an election for 10 months, but Senegal's highest election authority, the Constitutional Council, rejected that move and ordered the government to set a new election date as soon as possible. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. Today, Thursday, March 7th. More than 350 delegates from governments, research institutions, and seed production companies are gathering in Nairobi this week to address challenges in getting good quality seeds to African farmers. Experts say the lack of good seeds is hampering food production across the continent and contributing to the hunger crisis in many countries. Muhammad Yusuf reports.
According to UN agencies, more than 280 million people in Africa are food insecure, with over a billion unable to afford healthy diets. One of the problems is that quality seeds are inaccessible to many African farmers, leading to higher rates of crop failure. Daniel Agan works with the African Seed Trade Association. He says the delegates meeting in Mombasa are trying to address some of the challenges.
We are talking about Africa, which currently is grappling with issues like fake seeds, counterfeit seeds. Some people call it counterfeit seeds. We are talking about plant health. How healthy are those certified seeds to be planted in whichever environment? And then we are also talking about movement of seeds. And that has been one of the greatest elephants in the room, in the sense that for seed to move from one country to another has been a very, very big issue.
In October 2022, Kenya approved the use of genetically modified organisms after a 10-year ban. However, the lifting of the ban has worried its neighbours, who are sceptical of the GMO seeds and products. Tanzania stated that it will monitor its border to prevent any such food from Kenya from entering the country. Charles Miller, a board member of the African Seeds Trade Association, says countries will benefit if they harmonise their policies so seeds could be shipped across borders with no issues.
We work together as an industry to lobby for that harmonization. And by having the ability to be able to, for example, produce seeds in Kenya and ship them readily when it's needed to Tanzania or even to Senegal, under the same rules and regulations, it makes for a much more transparent and clear business model. And it also provides much more security to those growers at the other end of the production scheme.
Another issue is a lack of seeds that can thrive in harsh conditions like drought. Justin Rakoto Arizona is the Secretary General of the association. He says there's not enough money to support researchers to produce more seeds that can overcome Africa's evolving climate patterns.
For the research, I mean the development of new varieties, there is less and less budget allocated by the public sector to this section, whereas there is no plant variety protection in Africa. There is, but very difficult to implement it, and that implies the private sector may not be motivated to produce or to develop variety because there is no return on investment.
Charles Miller is also the head of Strategic Alliance for Solinta, a company that specializes in breeding hybrid potatoes across between two inbreed potato lines. His company's product, he says, is an example of what an advanced seeds can do for African farmers.
Where we produce hybrid potatoes and deliver those new genetics through a true seed, which is very innovative. And unlike the traditional seed tubers, you can store our seed for long periods of time without cold storages. You can transport them very easily. So the work, the effort, the sustainability angle when using our seeds is significantly higher than the traditional system.
For the time being, seed policies across much of Africa are stuck in the status quo. The regional bloc, COMESA, the common market of Eastern and Southern Africa, has introduced rules to harmonize the seeds trade, but only 7 out of 21 countries have ratified the regulation. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
In Guinea-Conakry, the authorities and labor unions are holding talks to reduce the price of basic food items ahead of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. The authorities recently increased the prices of basic foods, such as rice, which is the staple food in the country. Just less than a week until Ramadan, Guineans have raised an alarm over price hikes and called on the junta leader for help. Reporter Karim Kamara has more from Conakry.
Talks between the Guinean government and the labor unions on how to reduce prices are still without any tangible outcome, just few days to the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Ordinary Guineans have begun expressing concern over what the situation will be in the month of Ramadan if prices continue to rise. Asmiu Jallo is a trader in one of the markets here in Conakry. He blames the Guinean authorities of lack of proper action to rescue Guineans from current dying situation. He says the state must review the status of the market. He says if not, it is very difficult to make ends meet. He says Guinea is importing more food than it is producing. He says they have to find a lasting solution to the problem, whether it is due to transportation or a lack of warehouses to store foods. In homes across Conakry and in the interior of the country, housewives are complaining that for the past few months, they have not been able to buy enough food for the family, while their husbands are complaining about the shortage of money. In one of the markets I visited earlier on Wednesday, this is how traders reacted to the economic hardship and of sales ahead of Ramadan. Kaidatu Bangura, trader, has this to say. Market woman Kaidatu Bangura says she wakes up earlier every morning, but life is very hard. She says junta leader Mamadi Dumbuya that must help them. Another frustrated woman I caught up with, Omuntore, says the suffering is now too much for them. Another trader, Omuntore, says the suffering with no sales and no money. She says junta leader Mamadi Dumbuya must have pity on market women. The government in January increased prices of basic food items such as rice, which is a staple food in Guinea, as well as oil, onions, and flour, without explanation and without any alternative to the price increase. The government and the Guinean Chamber of Commerce have promised to supply the market with basic food items at affordable prices. But many Guineans have described this as wishful thinking. Mamadou Balde is the chairman of the Guinean Chamber of Commerce. He says Guinea has never had a food shortage and says those complaining about price increase are doing so out of ignorance. He says prices of basic food items cannot be discussed because Guinea has never had food shortages. He says they are not well informed about the world situation. As for the coming month of Ramadan, the Chamber of Commerce is going to see what to do for consumers. He says it is clear that importers always make sacrifices and are always in the forefront of making sure that Guineans enjoy a pleasant holy month. The trade unions called off their sit-down strike action last week to give dialogue with the government a chance, but they say they will call for another nationwide strike if authorities fail to reduce the price of basic food items before Ramadan. For VOA Africa, I am Karim Kamara in Conakry.
The Muslim holy month of Ramadan, which begins next week, is a time of fasting and prayer for Muslims. This year, it's being held in the shadow of the war in Gaza, and emotions on all sides are running high, especially at the East Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque, Islam's third holiest site. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Usually during Ramadan, Palestinian Muslims celebrate with festive communal meals at night after a day of fasting. But there is little feeling of celebration about this year's holiday, set to begin on March 10th amid the Israel-Hamas war in Gaza. More than 30,000 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli troops in Gaza, according to the Hamas-affiliated health ministry. Sheikh Mohammed Hussein is the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. He tells VOA there is a general feeling of unrest, both in Palestine and around the world, about the war in Gaza that is affecting all Palestinians. Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque is considered the third holiest site in Islam after Mecca and Medina. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians pray at the mosque on Ramadan. Sheikh Hussein says prayer at Al-Aqsa is important for all Muslims during Ramadan. He says that God gives more reward for prayers at Al-Aqsa than anywhere else. The Al-Aqsa compound is also holy to Jews, who know it as the Temple Mount and the site where the first two Jewish temples were built and later destroyed. It is situated just above the Western Wall, Judaism's holiest site. Al-Aqsa has often been the site of violent clashes between Palestinians and Israeli security forces and Palestinian attacks against Jewish worshippers at the Western Wall below. In fact, Hamas named its October 7th attack against Israel, which sparked the current war in Gaza, the Al-Aqsa Flood. Israeli hardline National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir has called for a restriction on the number of Palestinians allowed to enter Al-Aqsa during Ramadan. But so far, he has been overruled by the heads of the Israeli security forces, who say such restrictions will provoke violence. Palestinian analysts agree. Rassam Obeidat, a commentator with the Arab Al-Quds newspaper in East Jerusalem, says that in 2021, restrictions and impediments placed on worshippers by the Israelis led to clashes. Obeidat says that if Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu continues with his policy of following Ben-Gvir, the same process will be repeated. Near Al-Aqsa, people say they look forward to Ramadan despite security concerns. Nadia Nachi, an East Jerusalem resident, says she and other Palestinians hope Ramadan will be peaceful.
We don't want any problems, to die anyone, to injure anyone. Just we want to have peace, Ramadan.
70-year-old Sadeddin Al-Kazaz says he prays at Al-Aqsa for two reasons. First, he says, for a reward from God. Every prayer at Al-Aqsa, he says, is rewarded with 500 prayers in the eyes of God. The number two reason, he says, is that Muslims' presence at Al-Aqsa is very important. If he doesn't go and others don't go, he says, then Al-Aqsa will be left empty and Jews will come and take it. Israel does not allow young Muslim men to pray at Al-Aqsa even during Ramadan, citing concerns they will clash with Israeli security forces. The police also say they will probably restrict the number of all West Bank Palestinians allowed into Jerusalem during this tense period. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
And that's it for this Thursday, March 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for joining us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the entire Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Douglas Simpuga in Washington, wishing you a very nice day.
The world will celebrate International Women's Day under the theme Inspire Inclusion. On this week's edition of Our Voices, we will discuss what it means to truly inspire inclusion and how to forge a better world where women are empowered to innovate, lead, and inspire future generations. Join the conversation Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on the Voice of America.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-Minute VOA Newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.